Okay, tonight we're going to talk about stage three of the stages that Chuladasa teaches. A couple weeks ago he covered stage one, which was establishing a regular practice. And I know that's often a challenge for people to get that regular set. And hopefully some people are making some headway in that direction. He also covered stage two, which is some of the things that I guided you in today. You know, bringing your attention to the meditation object, in this case the breath, and also keeping that peripheral awareness. You want to be so focused on the breath that you lose that. You know, you still want to be aware of sounds and body sensations and particularly thoughts. And the characteristics, and also when you do lose the meditation object and you get lost in mind wandering, that moment when you remember that you're supposed to be meditating, you're supposed to be on the breath, and that aha moment, and really taking a little bit of time to kind of rejoice in that and congratulate yourself for remembering to come back. That's one of the really key features, because often we get very upset with ourselves when we lose the meditation object. You know, we kind of grit our teeth, oh, I lost it again. But we want just the opposite. We want to use that positive feedback to train the mind, because we can't hold it. We can't use willpower to hold our attention in place. So we really want to use a subtle finesse type training. And that positive feedback. So stage two is really characterized by the fact that you tend to forget the meditation object more than you remember it. You're probably away from the breath more than you're with it in stage two. And that's very natural. And, you know, some people tell me, oh, I can't meditate. You know, my mind won't stay still. And that's very common. It's a skill that you have to develop. It's kind of like saying, I can't play the piano. Well, no, you can't unless you practice. And meditation is exactly the same way. It's a skill, just like any other, just like a sport, like a musical instrument, any type of skill like that you can cultivate. So tonight we're going to go on to stage three. And stage three is similar to stage two. We do a lot of the same things, but we add some additional practices, some additional focuses. But what starts happening in stage three is that we actually tend to stay with the meditation object more than we forget the meditation object. So there's a shift at some point. You know, I guess you get about half, maybe you get half and half, and then suddenly you get to a point where you're actually with the meditation object more. So that's the main difference. And the goal of stage three is really to overcome this forgetting, to overcome forgetting the meditation object. And there's several things that we're going to do to help develop that skill. Like, again, we can't do it by willpower, but we can train the mind and use some specific techniques to learn that. And one of the things that we'll do is we want to extend attention. We want to keep a stable attention on our meditation object, or in this case, the breath. And one way to do that is to actively engage with it. And we talk about that a little bit in the guided meditation, noticing more detail, you know, noticing the beginning, the middle, the end. That's one way that the mind can be trained. And it makes it more interesting to the mind to try to notice certain things like that. The other thing we start to do in stage three is we start to examine our mind. So maybe we're with the meditation object, but we start to learn what's going on in our mind. We start to catch these distractions earlier and earlier. And we start to develop more stability. Through these techniques, we end up developing more stability of attention, which is a skill that can be used in all aspects of our life, not just in meditation. So what we want to do is we want to develop this awareness of mind, and there's a technique called checking in with the mind. And I mentioned that briefly in the guided as well, where periodically you just go and you take a snapshot of your mind, and you kind of see what's going on in the mind. And when you do that, this trains your awareness to actually start noticing these distractions earlier on in the process. You know, we start recognizing distractions, and it also helps us recognize drowsiness when that occurs. And that's another characteristic of this stage. We tend to, as we start to calm down, we tend to get more sleepy. So what we're going to talk about first is forgetting the meditation object. And basically what happens when we forget, you know, we're with the breath, we're noticing the detail, and then suddenly some kind of distraction comes up. You know, maybe it's a sound in the room, maybe it's a pain in our knee, maybe it's a thought. Often it's thoughts. Thoughts are the stickiest distractions, I think. And then what starts to happen is our attention starts to alternate. Maybe you're with the breath for a couple of seconds, and then you're with this thought for a second or so. As soon as you notice you're with the thought, you come back, but maybe it's a persistent thought. Maybe it keeps coming back. So we have this alternating attention. Maybe you have a pain in your knee while you're sitting. Our attention will alternate between those two things. And there are basically two types of distractions. We have subtle distractions, and that means it basically is how long you're away from the meditation object. So if something's subtle, maybe it's a sound you hear, maybe you just kind of hear it, notice it, and then you just come right back to the breath. That would be a very subtle distraction. And then maybe a gross distraction, maybe the sound is really persistent and it's kind of annoying. So your attention just keeps going to that sound. You know, you come back to the breath, you're there for a second, and then boom, you go back out to that disturbing sound or a thought that captures your attention. So what happens is you go from a subtle distraction to a gross distraction, means more time is spent away on the distraction than is actually on the breath. You may still have some awareness of the breath, it may be in the background, but more and more attention starts going to this distraction. And at that point, it becomes a gross distraction. And if the gross distraction gets strong enough, then it becomes forgetting. And then we totally lose track of the breath. And we're totally on the distraction, you know, whether it be a thought or a sound or some kind of body sensation. And, you know, this can happen kind of gradually. Maybe some kind of distraction slowly builds up momentum. Maybe the pain in your knee gets a little bit stronger. And so you start giving it a little more attention, and it builds up into a gross distraction and then the forgetting. Or it can be something really quick. Maybe some kind of really emotionally charged thought comes up in your mind. Maybe you've had an argument with someone or something like that. And then boom, your attention's just gone. You totally lose the breath and you're totally on this thought. We've probably all had that experience before. So it can really happen both ways. And at the point when we start forgetting, then we step into mind wandering. So at first we've forgotten the meditation object, and then we start having a thought. Maybe we have a thought about dinner. And then we think about, well, what are we going to do after dinner? Or maybe then you start thinking about a project you have at work the next day. So one thought leads to another, and then we're in mind wandering. And then, at that point, maybe 3 minutes later, we wake up and say, yeah, well, we're supposed to be following the breath, weren't we? And so that, again, that's that aha moment. You woke up, and we want to cultivate that. We want to congratulate ourselves for remembering that. Because that's kind of an unconscious process in our mind that kind of works automatically. We didn't do anything, did we? But we didn't. You know, we just set an intention somewhere that we were going to stay with the breath, and then we're alerted to it. It's kind of like remembering to pay a bill. You know, suddenly it pops in your mind that you need to pay a bill. It's a very similar type of process that the mind goes through. And so we really want to cultivate the positive aspects and not judge ourselves negatively. You know, we don't want to judge ourselves as a bad meditator because we lost the meditation object. Any questions on forgetting? So the next thing is how do we overcome the forgetting? And one of the first techniques we'll use is to actively engage with the meditation object. And that's where we want to, you know, follow the meditation object more closely. You know, we notice the beginning, middle, the end of the inhale. We'll notice the pause. We'll notice the beginning, middle, and end of the exhale. So we're kind of setting up a challenge for our mind, and our mind seems to like that. So when we set up a challenge like that, the mind seems to respond, and it's more likely to stay with it. We don't see it as boring as much if we have some kind of challenge in mind. And you can progressively increase that challenge. You know, as following the breath closely like that gets easier, then you can actually progressively refine that and add more detail for the mind to notice. And so ultimately, we start out noticing, you know, the beginning, middle, and end, and we may notice some parts more clearly than others. Maybe we notice the beginning more, and the ending kind of just fades out. Sensations just kind of fade out. But ultimately, we would like to develop equal clarity, you know, across the whole breath. So that we have clarity in the beginning, in the middle, and the end of the breath. And we have some clarity during the pause. So that's a skill that we're cultivating to actively engage the mind. And that helps to prevent forgetting. And, you know, when we're doing this, when we're starting to notice more detail, we may actually change the breath. You know, some part of our mind says, yeah, I'm going to notice this, but I'm going to make the breath a little bit stronger. And that's a natural process, and it's not a problem unless you're intending to do it. Unless you intend to say, I'm making the breath deeper so I can notice these details. But if it happens automatically and you're not in control of it, then don't worry about it. Because one, you don't have control over it, so you might as well let it go. And two, it tends to go away on its own after a while. So we're not trying to, and that's an important point, we're not trying to control the breath in this practice. We're not trying to make it deeper or calmer. We're just actually being with the way the breath actually is. and examining. We're actually examining it, studying the breath. You know, we also want to do this in a relaxed manner. I mean, when we try to start noticing more detail, it's easy to kind of get tense and say, I got to try harder to notice this detail. But we also want to stay very relaxed when we do that. And we use intention as a way to do that. We intend to do it, and then we just let our mind do that without trying to put an extra level of effort on top of it. The other thing that we want to maintain is this peripheral awareness. Because often if you try to drill down into the details of the breath, you can kind of lose that peripheral awareness we're talking about. You won't hear any sounds, or you won't feel anything else in your body, or most importantly, you won't notice thoughts. So we want to keep that intention to have that peripheral awareness while we're doing this. You know, if you're drilling in so close, then you need to maybe step back just a little bit so that you still have that bigger awareness. Because that's very important to cultivate the two at once. Because if you don't do that, you know, if you're with the breath very closely and you don't have that awareness, then you tend to get lost very quickly in the thoughts. You don't notice them. And then you look up and 5 minutes later, you've been thinking or mind wandering. So that's a very important part of this as well. So there's another practice. We did following the breath. This is called following the breath. That's beginning, middle, and end. And that's typically enough at stage three. But for some people, that may come fairly easily. You may be able to develop that level of clarity pretty easily. And then it becomes kind of routine, and it doesn't engage the mind anymore. So there's another practice that Chuladasana has called connecting with the breath. Often it's not necessary until stage four or five, but for some people, it might be useful. You know, if you can easily follow the breath and it's no longer engaging for you, then you work with connecting the breath. And that's taking it up to the next level. That's giving your mind a little bit more of a challenge to connect with the breath. So one thing you want to do is notice as many sensations as you can in the breath, both in the inhale and the exhale. So you're upping that a little bit. I mean, first we were noticing the beginning, the middle, and the end. But now we're going to try to notice even more sensations. And we see how many different sensations we can notice. And then we start to notice the length of the pauses. Typically, there's a pause between the inhale and the exhale, or after the exhale. And those can vary in length. So what we want to start noticing, you know, is the pause after the inhale longer than the pause after the exhale, or vice versa, you know, are they the same? So that's another level of detail that we want to start noticing in this connecting practice. Once we can do that easily, once we notice the length of the pauses, then we can actually start comparing the in-breath and the out-breath. You know, is the in-breath longer than the out-breath? Is it shorter than the out-breath? Are they about the same? And, you know, you may find that changes throughout the meditation. Sometimes the inhales are longer, sometimes the exhales are longer. The breath it's a good way to notice impermanence because the breath does change considerably throughout the meditation set. It often gets calmer, but we're not trying to make it get calmer. So we're just kind of noticing what does happen with the breath. And so we want to try to make this enjoyable, again, like a game, and not get too wrapped up in it. And sometimes we won't be able to notice this level of detail. Maybe on a breath we space out for a little bit, or we go to one of these distractions for a time. And that's fine. You know, you always have the next breath to go to. So, you know, you don't have to get upset about it or anything like that, because the next breath is just going to keep coming and coming. So you got another opportunity to practice. You know, it's kind of like throwing darts at a dartboard. You know, you're aiming for the target, you know, you throw it, and at first you're not going to get very close to the target. But if you just keep doing the practice, your body gets more skillful. And the meditation is very much the same way. As you start to notice more of these details, you'll start noticing more and more just by practicing. It's not this huge effort to do it. It's just that repetition and practice will actually improve that skill. And then once we've made some progress on that, the other thing we want to do is we want to start following the breath more in silence. You know, sometimes a label is appropriate, like you want to note the beginning and the end of the breath. That's very helpful sometimes at the beginning to put a label on it. But at some point, those labels can kind of start getting in the way. And they can also be kind of slippery, because if you start thinking about the breath process and things like that, that can easily lead to other thoughts. So at some point, when it's no longer useful, you want to let go of this and just start observing the breath more in silence. And So slowly start cutting back on this commentary. We often run a commentary almost like a sports commentary, you know, as to what we're doing. And that's fine. It's very helpful in the beginning. But there gets to be a point when you might want to let go of that, and it's no longer necessary. And you might also find that this silent way of being with the breath is actually much more enjoyable. It can be more calming and things like that. So questions about these practices at all? Connecting or following or any of that? Yes.
Well, okay, so it's not just about connecting. Sometimes I feel like I can have a whole storyline going on at the same time as noticing the breath. Mm-hmm. Look at what you do there. Because, the thoughts are still there. I mean, you could be thinking, I'm noticing my breath, you know?
Right, and that's perfectly fine. That's a very key point that you brought up. We're not trying to make thoughts go away. We can't do that. They're going to still be in the background, but we want to keep them in the background.
Okay.
As soon as we start to bring attention to the background, those thoughts, then we want to just gently bring it back to the breath. So we want to kind of keep the breath in the foreground or in the middle of our awareness, and then just let all these other things be in the awareness. So your mind could just be running all sorts of thoughts in the background, and that's perfectly fine at this stage. There's some stages later on where that ends up getting more quiet. But at stage three, we just let it be in the background.
Okay, I also have another thing where I'm like, maybe this is not right, because I'm focusing very, like, I feel like I'm on a, blade, like trying to focus. The next moment,
so that I stay on the breath.
Okay, so how do you stay on it? That's how I'm connecting the next moment.
Are you actually saying that to yourself, or are you just having that intention?
A little bit, yes. It is going on in my mind, yes.
Okay. And that's fine if that's what you need at this stage, but eventually you kind of want to start letting go of a commentary at least. But you can still have that intention to keep connecting.
Well, some people say count the breath. Sometimes you just count the breath. If that's not enough, count it and do your alphabet at the same time. One A, two B.
Right. Yeah, and Chulanasa only recommends counting up to about 10. And once you've gotten to 10 successfully without losing the breath, then you let go of the counting at that point.
And then you start again at 1.
No, not with his. Now, if you lose it, say you're at 4 and you get lost in mind wandering, or you lose the count, then you start over at 1 until you get up to 10.
And then what?
And that's it. You drop the counting at that point.
But what do you mean at that point in the meditation session?
Yeah, at that point in the meditation session. Okay. So you just count at the very beginning of the session, up to 10, and it might take you several tries to get to 10. And if you've tried several times and you're losing it, then go to 5. Try to get 5. And then let go of the counting. So he uses it as a way to get settled in and a way to kind of program your mind, condition your mind that you're meditating. And that counting is definitely a way to do that.
Yeah, so I actually also on the counting, so that's only at the beginning. If your mind does start to wander, you don't recommend to start doing that again throughout your practice. That's kind of what...
Well, you certainly can. In fact, Chulanasa also does recommend that if you've been gone for a long time, maybe you've lost the meditation object for 5 minutes or something like that, you might want to start over and count 10 breaths again, just to get you resettled. So, you kind of have to experiment and see what works for you on that.
Why is it that keeping some peripheral awareness helps the mind from wandering instead of just focusing on the meditation object? I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, it does a few things. It helps us develop that mindfulness portion of it, and it's also training awareness to notice distractions earlier. Because if we're really just focused really tightly on the meditation object, we don't see that movement of the mind. If we keep a little more panoramic awareness, then we tend to see those movements. We tend to see our attention going to a thought or see it going to a body sensation.
So it's a broader view.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a broader view. But with training, you can actually get where you can actually still get closer and closer to the breath, notice more and more detail, and still keep that awareness. And that increases the overall power of the mind. So you have that attentional stability, but you also have a great deal of awareness at the same time, which can be very useful for this investigation that helps you develop insight. Yes?
Peripheral awareness, is your mind actually going from the object, meditation object to the surrounding, the peripheral? I mean, is your mind, I always thought your mind could really only concentrate on one thing.
Well, attention can only, right, not really. Attention can only rest on one thing in the center of your attention, but you have that kind of awareness of what's going on, and often your attention will alternate between the two.
Oh, I see.
It's alternating attention. But you can still have some awareness of it. Like, vision is a good example. You know, you can be looking at one object, but there's still noticeable objects in your peripheral vision. It's the same way in meditation. You'll still have some awareness. You're not noticing much detail. It's just kind of a fuzzy kind of awareness. But you still will have a little bit. You will have that awareness, and then again, most of the things that stand when they start standing out, that means your mind is at your attention is actually gone between the two. Yeah.
Attention and awareness are two different.
Yeah, they really are two different things because they have different functions. Attention really tends to drill down on something and analyze it and things like that, whereas awareness is kind of more holistic. It kind of sees the big picture type of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's where they're both really important to cultivate and develop. You're welcome. Anything else? Okay, well, the next way that we want to work on improving our forgetting is to cultivate introspective or internal awareness. And basically that's awareness of what our mind's doing. So, we've noticed that some in peripheral awareness, but we want to be a little more specific about noticing what our mind's doing, what our attention's doing. And again, this is a skill, this internal awareness. Mostly what I've been talking about is external awareness, you know, sights, sounds, body sensations. But this external awareness is actually what's going on in the mind, what you're thinking, maybe your mental state, you know, any hindrances maybe that are coming up or any movements of attention. So that's the next skill that we want to cultivate, because without developing that, it makes it very hard to develop a lot of stability of mind if you don't have this awareness of what your mind's doing. It just kind of makes sense. And, you know, early on in the practice, in you know, stage two and the beginning of stage three, we have developed that spontaneous internal awareness. You know, that's the point where you remember that, oh yeah, I was supposed to be focusing on the meditation object, and it arises spontaneously. But you can also cultivate that to arise, you know, more frequently, and so you catch things earlier. You can't really make it happen, but you can set up the conditions so that it's more likely to happen. And that positive feedback is one way, but these other practices make it more so that you develop, eventually you can develop almost a continuous awareness peripherally of what's going on in the mind while you're still with the meditation object. And that's the point we're actually trying to get to. And the first practice that will help develop this skill is called labeling. And when we have that aha moment, oh, I woke up, what we want to start doing is we want to create a label for what we were thinking about or what our mind was doing at the time that we woke up. And maybe early on you won't notice that. But as you start to have this intention to put a label on it, maybe the first time you go, I don't really remember what I was thinking about. But as you have this intention and it happens more often and your mind gets a little sharper, you can actually remember what was happening when you remembered that you were supposed to be on the breath. And you want to just give it a very simple label. You don't want to sit there and analyze and think of, you know, exactly what it was. You know, some simple labels like thinking, you know, remembering, or maybe you have an image. If an image was in your mind, you say image. Or maybe it was one of the hindrances. Maybe there was some desire or aversion or doubt. So when you see those things come up, just put a label on it. No one, it only takes a second. You know, just don't do a deep analysis. And then once you've done that, then gently direct your attention back to the breath. So we're kind of adding that. We're adding another skill that we want our mind to develop, and that's kind of knowing what it's doing more of the time. And when we do this, labeling regularly, that's going to strengthen that internal awareness. Questions on labeling? Then the other practice that we can develop is called checking in with the mind. And I had to do this briefly in the guided meditation, But what you'll do is when you're with the breath, periodically you'll just go and kind of take a snapshot of the mind to see what's going on. You know, maybe you'll notice some thoughts in your mind. Maybe you notice mental states. Maybe you have some joy. Maybe you have some drowsiness, things like that. So you're just doing a quick check-in to see what's going on in your mind. What we pay attention to, that tends to train awareness. You know, if we're, like, say we're interested in sports cars or birds, for example, well, our awareness is like a filter. It notices all, awareness is aware of all sorts of things, and when it finds something that it thinks we might be interested in, it brings it into attention, or it notifies attention, and then our attention goes there. So if you're interested in things like that, you'll notice sports cars. You know, maybe one's driving down the road while you're eating at a restaurant, and you'll notice it. Or if you're a bird watcher, maybe you see a unique bird, your awareness catches it, and then it brings your attention to it. Well, this is very much the same sort of process that we're developing. If we start learning to pay attention to our mind, then that starts to happen. It brings it to our attention when our mind has gone to some kind of distraction. And so we're training that awareness component to notify us when our mind has gone off the meditation object or gone on to something else. You know, when we take this snapshot, if we notice a gross distraction, you know, maybe something that's really strong or something that's, we're on it more than we are on the breath, then at that point we kind of strengthen our intention to come back to the meditation object. So, because sometimes if it's a gross distraction, we're already pretty immersed in it, and so it might take a little bit stronger intention to keep your awareness or keep your attention back on the meditation object. And, you know, this checking in should be very gentle and should be very brief. You know, you don't want to spend 30 seconds analyzing what's going on in the mind. Just kind of going over there, looking, seeing what's in the mind. Sometimes it's nothing. Sometimes you're kind of in the middle of a thought that maybe was percolating in this awareness, but you actually see it more clearly when you move your attention there and see what's going on. And so you really want to cultivate this skill regularly throughout your meditation practice. And Chul also recommends maybe about every six breaths or so that you just take this quick check-in. This is at stage three. And you don't want to count your breaths and then say, you know, you don't want to be real specific about it, but roughly every six breaths. It could be every 10 or it could be every 5, you know. You don't have to be precise, but that's about how often you want to check in. And so the more often that you check in, then you start to develop this skill, this introspective awareness of what's going on in your mind.
So let me take this straight. So you do the labeling, and then the checking in comes after that checking in.
Well, you only do the labeling. You could do both of these together because they're not done at the same time. So you only do the labeling when you've been lost, when you've forgotten the meditation object, when you come back. So you just label quickly what you were thinking about when you were lost.
Yeah, but when you were thinking about so specifically, I was thinking about my daughter or something like that.
You could be that specific if you want, but yeah. You don't necessarily want to. You could just say thinking. The label could just be thinking, or you could do it like remembering if you're remembering something in the past, or planning if you're planning something in the future. You want simple labels. You don't want to overanalyze the labels. So you can do that, you can do the labeling, and then the checking in would be different, would be at a different time. You know, you're with the breath for a while, and something remembers that, yeah, I need to check in real quick. And so I'm going to check in on the mind.
So is that to check in and see that, are you really on the breath? Or?
Well, it could be both. It's kind of checking in to see what the mind's doing. And the breath may go to the background when you do that. So you look at the mind. But you can also notice the quality of your attention as well. You know, am I with the breath clearly? That could be something you could notice as well. Or is it kind of fuzzy?
Okay. So if it's fuzzy, what do you do? Just notice that it's fuzzy.
You can notice that it's fuzzy, and you can also have an intention to maybe make it a little less fuzzy, maybe to notice a little bit more detail when you come back to it. Other questions on that? So really the labeling and the checking in kind of tend to work together. Like I say, they can both be done because they're done at different times. And so the labeling kind of alerts you to the type of things that typically displace your attention or to the type of distractions. You know, everyone's mind works a little different. And at different times, we're going to have different distractions. And so that helps us kind of realize where our distractions might be. And it also helps us look out for them more. You know, if we know that we constantly get lost in planning, for example, we start to notice that, and we maybe we're more aware of that, and we catch it earlier by developing that sort of awareness.
And wouldn't that be a reason for, you know, the check-in is kind of knowing thyself better,
you know? Yeah, exactly. That's another key benefit of it, because, you know, the thoughts are the sticky things. Those are the things we get lost in. And if we know those better, we know the types of thoughts that we're having. And the same thing with the hindrances that we talked about last week. We start to know which hindrances are strongest for us at different times in our life. And what happens, the benefit of doing this check-in, is that we start to notice it earlier. We start to have that awareness, and our mind starts to know, even before we've really lost the breath, that our attention has gone to a thought. So that's the whole point we're trying to get to, is noticing things earlier and earlier. A key point here, though, is we're not trying to eliminate these thoughts or these distractions. And Chul Austin has a really great saying. He says, let them come. So let the distractions come. We can't stop them. Let them go. Once you notice that you're on a distraction, just let go of it. And then let them be in the background. You know, gently bring our attention back, but we can just let these distractions be there in the background. We're definitely not going to try to push them away. And, you know, once we start developing this introspective awareness to watch the mind, it starts giving us more of a stable platform for our attention. You know, early on in our meditation practice, everything is just kind of distracted and kind of chaotic, and we don't really have this stability, any kind of stability, and that makes it much harder to know when you've forgotten the meditation object. But once we start developing a little stability, then it's like being up on a raft in a turbulent ocean. You know, if you were in the ocean, you're going to be bobbing up and down and maybe sucked under in waves. But if you get up on the raft, you actually start to get a little stability, and you can actually kind of see what's going on around you, and maybe, you know, find a way out or a way out of the predicament. And it's very much the same sort of process, you know, with our mind. We want to develop that stability, and then it tends to build. Once we start getting some stability, it makes it easier to get more stability, because we've actually started to notice these types of thoughts, you know, more quickly and more easily. So any questions on the whole introspective awareness process, or Stephanie?
It feels a bit forced to me to, you know, intentionally check in every so many breaths, even if you don't count the breath, because to me it's a bit of, well, can't I have trust that I'll notice anyway that I'm gone and then come back instead of checking the whole time? I don't know, it's not very
laid-back approach. But one thing to keep in mind is that this is a temporary practice. The checking in is a temporary practice, and you're eventually gonna let go of it. It's just a train that. But once it starts happening on its own, you're trusting that it's gonna start happening, then you can just let go of it. And you can find what works for you. If checking in every six breaths is too much, maybe you check in every 5 minutes or something like that. So, you know, each person's going to be a little different, and different things might work. You're right, it is a bit contrived, but things are a little more contrived early on. But once we have that skill, then it starts getting in the way. The checking in would get in the way after a while, and then at that point, you just let go of it. It's kind of like, you know, using a raft across a river. When you get to the other side, you don't want to put the raft on your back and keep going. You know, you just kind of leave the raft there behind once you've used that skill. And, you know, all these practices are things to try. You know, if they don't work for you, then you might not want to do them. But, you know, at least something you might want to give a shot and see if it works for you.
Has what is your meditation object, and has it changed?
I typically use the breath as my object.
Which part?
I don't often do it at the nostrils. I usually feel it where I feel it the most strongly. And for me, that tends to be kind of in the diaphragm, chest area. And that's just where I find the breath to be most enjoyable. And I have easier time sticking with it. Sometimes at the nostrils, it would get very faint, and then I would get kind of frustrated because I couldn't feel anymore or things like that. I've since kind of gotten over that, but because when I do it there, for me, they're fairly strong sensations, and they're fairly easy to stick with. And so,
is that what you can do all the time, or have you changed?
Well, most of the time. Sometimes I'll change and do kind of whole body I'll feel any breath sensations throughout my whole body. So I take a little bit wider awareness, and then I'll feel them. So I might feel some in the chest. I might still feel some in the nostrils and things like that. So, and that can be in fact, Chuladasa has some practices later in stages 5 and 6 where you do, because of breathing with the body, where you do things like that, where you maybe you'll feel one part of your body still noticing the breath, but maybe you'll feel any sensations in your thighs, that particularly the ones that are associated with breathing. And it turns out to be kind of an energy flow type thing, or prana, as you do it. So. But I think that's important to realize, you know, what works best for you in terms of where you feel it. Chuladasa says there's some advantages to the nose because we have more nerve endings there. But if that doesn't work for you, then, you know, try some other area.
It's nice to get some ideas on what we can do. So, Nick, what are you doing?
I'm still experimenting with the nose, which doesn't come easily to me. But, you know, I'm kind of open to the idea that maybe this isn't going to work for me that well. It's quite an effort for me to find the sensations there. And often, I will go through the 4-step process that Blake led us through in the guided meditation. And often, I will stop when I get to the third one, which is the breath, where you're just being with sensations, any of the breath sensations. And if I don't find myself naturally getting concentrated, I'll just stay at that stage and feel the breath wherever it is. And only when I'm really feeling settled and the nostrils are kind of the sensations that are arising naturally, well, I think, okay, I think I'm kind of in a good spot and I'm going to see if I can zoom in further. So I struggled with it for a long time, and now I'm allowing myself to be a little looser and just trying to find what works best.
Thanks for sharing that. So the next thing that can come up in stage 3 is some pain and discomfort. You know, as we start to sit longer, you know, we may start out at 15 or 20 minutes, and as we start adding to our practice, maybe we're up to 40 minutes or 45 minutes or something like that. The longer we sit, we're more likely to start having some pain and discomfort. And so that tends to be something that we need to work with at this stage. The first thing you want to do when you're sitting and you start to have a pain is you basically just want to ignore it and leave it in the background. Again, you're not trying to shove it away, but you just kind of let it be in the background. And you also want to resist that first urge to move, because our natural tendency in daily life, if we have any kind of discomfort, well, we shift. You know, if you really notice what you're doing, fidgeting, we tend to do that. But in meditation, you don't want to do that right away. You actually want to, you know, just kind of let that urge be there and let those sensations be in the background. And, you know, you don't fight them. You just come back to the breath. As soon as you notice the pain, you just come back to the breath. And now what might happen is it gets very persistent. Say you're sitting cross-legged and your knee starts hurting. Well, you come back to the breath, and then your attention goes right back to the knee, and you're going back and forth like this. And then suddenly it makes it harder and harder because it's getting so strong that you really can't even hardly stay with the breath very long before it goes right back to the pain. So when that happens, you basically want to switch. Instead of having the breath as your meditation object, you want to go to that pain. It's sensation just like the breath is. So what you want to do is you want to start examining that painful sensation. And you want to do some observation of it. You know, you want to notice, you know, is it changing over time? Is it stronger? Is it weaker? You know, how big an area is it? You know, is it, what kind of pain is it? Is it stabbing or, you know, heat-like pain or different types of pain like that? You know, is it localized to one area or does it kind of spread out through a bigger area? So you just want to observe it. This is a key point. You want to try not to resist it, because our natural inclination is if we've got a pain, we want to resist it. And Shinzen Young, who's a meditation teacher, he has a formula. He calls it suffering equals pain times resistance. So we can have a very small pain, but if we have a lot of resistance to it, it can create a lot of suffering. And the same sort of thing, we can have a strong pain, but if we have very little resistance, then we're not going to have near as much suffering. You know, Chuladasa says that pain is part of this life, but the suffering is optional. And so, as we examine, that's the thing we're learning when we examine it. We're not just doing it to be tough or to, you know, to gut it out. We're actually observing it to see what the nature of pain actually is. And so, you observe it for a while. It might dissipate. It might not. You're not trying to make it dissipate. And then if it does dissipate, then you just go back to your meditation object. Go back to the breath. Now, what happens if it, you know, you're with it and it just keeps getting worse and worse? Well, you know, you don't want to injure your body, and you don't want to, you know, there's a certain level, all of us have a certain pain tolerance that where we start resisting. And so if it really gets bad and you feel like you need to move, you want to do it mindfully. So maybe you make the intention that I'm going to move at the end of the next exhale. So when you do that, then you want to start moving, and you want to be mindful of your movement. You want to move very slowly, and you want to feel the sensations of the movement. And so you move into a position where the pain is lessened. Now, the first thing that you might learn is that maybe 2 minutes later, a pain comes up somewhere else in your body. And that's also a very valuable lesson, because you've alleviated the pain in your knee, but maybe you have a pain in your back. And that tends to be the nature of this meditative type pain. It tends to move around. You know, maybe it goes out of one area and it comes into another. And that tends to make you think that, you know, it's nothing real physical. It's just the fact that you're sitting still for 45 minutes. Now, you also want to be aware of pain. Now, if you still have pain when you get up and you're walking around and 5 minutes later you're still in pain, then you probably need to change your meditation posture or do something different. You know, it could be something that could cause some injury. So you want to differentiate between this natural meditative pain and also something that really, where you're not sitting properly, it really might cause some kind of long-term injury. But usually that's the length of the time that it continues after you get up. You know, your legs might be asleep or whatever for a little bit when you first get up. But if that doesn't go away, then you probably need to change something up. So thoughts on or questions on pain, discomfort, working with it?
I mean, I noticed that people like do all kinds of things to get really comfortable so that there will be no pain. There will be no pain on this.
And you want to try to do that as much as you can. You want to find a comfortable posture, one that works for you, whether it's on a chair or a cross-legged or maybe one of the benches that we have back there. Do that as much as you can. But then you're going to realize that not all pain, you're still going to have some pain no matter how comfortable you get. Unless maybe you're lying down, but then you tend to get drowsy for most people.
What about stiffness in your jaw, or it's not necessarily pain, but maybe you just need to like stretch out a little bit? Is that also something that you should just focus on?
Well, you know, if you do feel a tension in your body and you can just release it, you go ahead and do that, especially at the first of the set, go ahead and release any physical tension. But if you had a pain come up late, like a tightness in your jaw later on, you might try just letting go of the tension, but if that doesn't work, then you would observe it like any other pain and just be with it and see what it is and how big it is and if there's a change, that sort of thing. Question?
Sometimes moving, I find that when I'm trying to sit like this and like keep my posture, you know, really straight, that I have this natural like inclination to sort of like move forward, kind of like hunch over as I'm sitting here, and then I'll notice it, and my first inclination is to move back up and like sit straight again. Should I just ignore that and just like be okay with the fact that I'm slouching, or should I try to get back into that straight up posture?
Well, you can actually get in that situation where you do a lot. You know, you start end up doing it a lot.
I can do it.
Yeah, and I've done that too in the past. What I would do is be with it for a while.
Okay.
And see what happens. You know, if it starts getting really painful and you can't be with it, then go ahead and straighten up. You know. So I wouldn't make a regular habit of it, but, you know, once or twice during your sit, I think it would be all right.
Yeah, it always happens.
I think it's kind of natural. Yeah, I think it kind of, it's kind of a natural inclination.
Okay.
So the next thing that can come up at this stage is dullness and drowsiness. You know, we start to get calm, we start to get some stable attention, and then we get drowsy. And, you know, the way they used to train elephants in India in the Buddha's time was they would tie a rope to the elephant's leg and they would stake it to a very deep stake in the ground. And at first the elephant's thrashing and trying to get away. And then at some point the elephant just kind of gives up and he realizes he can't get away and he just lays down and goes to sleep. And that's what happens with our mind. You know, at first our mind is very, you know, distracted. And once we start tethering it a little bit to our meditation object, then that can start to happen. It finally says, oh, well, I'm not going to be able to just wander freely. So it finally starts calming down, and often when we do that, we just tend to go to sleep. And so so this dullness, you know, it can be on a continuum. we can have a very strong drowsiness where we're kind of falling asleep or actually are falling asleep to maybe just a bit spaced out. We're just not really clear with the meditation object. And what happens with this dullness, it's actually a scattering of attention, just like distractions are. But there's one difference. A distraction, you know, maybe we're with the breath a little bit, and then our attention goes to, you know, a pain in the knee, and then it comes back. So we're alternating between the distraction and our meditation object. But what happens with dullness is we're actually alternating between our meditation object and basically a void or nothingness type thing, you know. So our mind is kind of, it's kind of either with, maybe it's with the little first part of the breath, and then it just kind of spaces out for a little bit. It's not really going to a distraction. It's just kind of in this never drowsy land type place. And so it's a very similar type process to actually distraction, but it works a little bit differently, and it tends to have a different effect on the body in terms of drowsiness. And at this stage, you know, once you start to have that scattering of attention, and the dullness happens, then it can go into really strong dullness, and that's when you actually do fall asleep. Maybe you're sitting down. You ever felt like that? You jerk. You know, they call that the Zen lurch. It's so common. Yeah, I've heard it called the Zen lurch. The first thing we want to do if we have a lot of strong dullness in our meditation is that we want to, you know, examine any potential causes. You know, maybe we're not getting enough sleep. Maybe we're pushing ourselves too hard. We have fatigue. So that's the first thing you want to do. Do I need more sleep? You know, do I need to work a little bit less hard? Or, you know, do I need to stay off the computer at night so I sleep more restfully? The other thing would be like any health conditions that you might have. Maybe you have sleep apnea, chronic fatigue, something like that. You know, if this strong dullness persists for, you know, weeks at a time, you might want to consider going to a doctor and seeing if there's any kind of problems, health problems that you might have.
I always think dullness has got to do with time of day.
Well, we'll get to that later. Yeah, we'll talk about that too. Well, that was the next thing I was going to talk about. It can be the time of day. You know, it's harder to meditate after lunch,
yes,
especially if you've had a big meal, than it is other times of the day. And that's going to be a little different for each person. Each of us have different rhythms. And, you know, some people have trouble waking up and meditating first thing in the morning. I think we talked about that last week. And, you know, some people after lunch, some people at night. So that's one key, is to find a time of day where you're fairly awake that you can actually meditate. And then also maybe have a bit of a smaller meal. That's it. You know, sometimes on retreat, I eat too much at lunch and I'm sleepy. I find if I eat less, then I'm not as sleepy. So that can be a contributing factor there. But if we've eliminated any kind of physical causes, like not enough sleep, then we want to talk about the dullness that's caused by in meditation itself. You know, we talked about these brief moments where you actually fall asleep. And then you might awake from that. Usually that kind of startles you. And you awake from that, but you still have this subtle dullness. You know, maybe you feel like you're in a bit of a dense fog. You know, everything's a little fuzzy, and you really can't focus on the breath. You can't notice many sensations. You're just kind of fuzzy there. Maybe you have some dreamlike imagery start to come up, or the nonsense thoughts that don't even make any sense. It often feels like when you go to sleep at night, you have the same sort of thing happens. And often this subtle dullness tends to lead us back to the strong dullness, where we actually do get drowsy and do tend to fall asleep again. And you know, it's all a very natural process. We're conditioned. When we turn our mind inward at night, you know, we let go of sounds and thoughts and things like that, we tend to go to sleep. And we're doing something very similar in meditation. We're turning our thoughts inward to the breath, and we're conditioned to go to sleep at that point. So there's a certain amount of conditioning that we really have to overcome. And we've also calmed some agitation. Once we start having some success in stage three, where we develop some stable attention, we've actually calmed some of the agitation. And when we do that, our energy levels tend to drop, and we tend to get more sleepy. It's nice to be rid of the agitation, but then often this sleepiness will kind of overcome it, or will be a new problem. So how do we overcome the strong dullness? Well, the first thing is to catch it early. When we develop this introspective awareness of our mind, then we tend to catch it early. We know when we're dull. And that's one thing we do when we check in, is we know that there's a certain amount of dullness there. Other things we can do, we can open our eyes. You know, especially if we're in a light room, that can wake us up, or maybe adjust our posture so we're sitting more upright. You know, as we slouch, that's what you're talking about with the slouch, we tend to get more sleepy. So that might definitely be a time when you would want to adjust your posture. you can take 3 or 4 deep breaths, and then you can blow it out from, you can purse your lips and have some resistance, like, so there's some resistance on the exhale. And these are things, you know, things to try. Try them one at a time. And they go from the order of less drastic things to more drastic things. So try the least drastic things first. And then if those don't work, then kind of move on down the list. Next thing we can do is tense and release the muscles. You know, do that several times. Tense up your whole body and release. That can sometimes arouse energy in the mind. If none of that works, then you might want to do standing meditation. And you can do that in a group setting. You can just quietly stand up on your cushion and meditate standing up. It's not super comfortable, but it does tend to wake you up. I mean, you might still kind of get drowsy, but it does tend to wake you up more than the sitting. If that doesn't work, then you go to walking meditation. You can focus on the breath while you're walking, but you can also change and focus on, like, the sensations of the feet as you're walking. So there's still sensations, but you just switch from the breath to the sensations at the bottom of the feet or the sensations of walking. And then finally, if that doesn't work, you can actually go and throw cold water on your face. So there's a whole spectrum of things to try, and some get more drastic than others. But what happens if you sink immediately, if you go right back into drowsiness, you didn't do enough to wake yourself up. So you need to find something a little bit stronger the next time. Usually this will arouse you for at least a few minutes, at least 5 minutes, some of these techniques will, so that you can get out of that. And then finally, if none of that works, then maybe you need to take a nap. You know, maybe you really are tired and you need to take a nap. And so then once you have woken up, once you've fully aroused yourself, then you need to maintain it through keeping that extrospective awareness, that external awareness, the peripheral awareness that we talked about. And that'll tend to energize the mind. If we're noticing thoughts, we're noticing sensations, we're noticing sounds, that tends to be more energizing than if we're just on the breath. And sometimes that's the reason we actually did get drowsy, is because we kind of lost that peripheral awareness. And sometimes if it's really bad, we can just let go of the breath altogether and just let our awareness, like we did at the beginning of the guided, is just let our awareness go where it will, our attention go where it will. And anywhere except you want to let go of thoughts of past or present, or past or future, so you want to stay in the present. But as we develop more of this introspective awareness, then we really do start to catch these things earlier. So let's see. So basically, in conclusion, you know, we have the practice of following the breath. We have labeling when we've forgotten the breath, and we have this checking in process to train the mind to be more aware. We've mastered stage three when basically we don't forget the meditation object. And the mind wandering no longer occurs. Now, that doesn't mean that the mind doesn't still roam. That doesn't mean it's perfectly on the breath for the whole sit. But what happens is that there's still some awareness of breath. And our attention may alternate, it may go to other things, but we still are able to keep some awareness of the breath. So we never totally lose it. We might be a little dull, but we've never actually totally lost it. And that really becomes the first milestone of meditation. On the road to developing skill meditation. So when you can do that, when you can stay with the object, then you congratulate yourself and you realize that you have developed quite a bit of skill from when you first started. So that's all I had. Any questions?
Does Jules also have ideas or suggestions on, you know, you first sit and you have to relax all parts of your body. How long?
I've heard some guidance that he's done, and he might stay with that a minute or two, just to kind of go through the body, release any tension that you have, because relaxation is an important part of the process. You know, when our physical body relaxes, our mind tends to relax at the same time. Anything else? Okay, thanks everyone.
Thank you.